You are listening to WGOT Port Washington. Schreiber High, get ready for a rocking podcast with Chris Anderson, an amazing trumpet player who has spent more than 40 years touring and recording with greats like Benny King, the Allman Brothers, Bon Jovi, Bruce Springsteen, and the legendary Southside Johnny. Chris, hi and welcome. I'm really excited to have you on my show today. How are you?
I'm very good. Thanks for having me on.
Great. I'm super ready for this exciting opportunity to speak with you. So, let's start from the beginning. Could you tell my audience a little about you and your background and family?
Okay. I grew up in Hastings on Hudson, New York. I have two older brothers. My mom was a school teacher. My dad had a variety of businesses, successful and unsuccessful in New York. I started playing trumpet in school the way many kids do in fifth grade. The school I came from, Hastings on Hudson, had a really strong music department, and it was a very cool thing to be in the band. So I progressed as I got more serious about it. When I was in high school, I played in the Westchester Youth Symphony, and I did Allstate and all those kind of things. I ended up going to Manhattan School of Music Prep Division when I was a junior in high school on Saturdays, because my teacher taught there and he got me a scholarship. Then after high school, I went to Manhattan School of Music, and after about a year at Manhattan, I realized that classical music was not for me, and I kind of radically changed how I was playing, and found my way into the world of Latin music. Mm-hmm. Should I stop now or continue?
Oh, you can continue if you want.
Okay. After college, I worked in Latin music for about 10 years. I worked with all of the greats, maybe not all the greats, but at that time in New York, the Latin music scene in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s, into the mid 80s was really vibrant. I toured the world with Ray Barreto. I did a lot of touring and playing with Hector Lavoe, who was an incredible singer. And it was a great time. Great time to learn how to play. I played live gigs probably four nights a week in New York, and thoroughly enjoyed it. But after a while, the business started changing in Latin music, and also the lifestyle of really late nights was time to end that. So I kind of shifted and got into the world of pop and rock. I got started in that by playing in a show called Beehive, which started in a club in New York, ended up running for 2 years at the top of the gate, the Village Gate in the Village. It was an on-stage band, and it was really very much like a live gig, even though it was a show eight times a week. So I did that, and then that led to other things. Eventually to Southside, but before that, New York Rock and Soul Review with Donald Fagen, and I started doing Benny King and other things like that. When I started with Johnny, I think it was 1998, I've been with him ever since, playing trumpet and arranging. That's led to many other fun stuff, things, playing with the Allman Brothers for 10 years when they did their Beacon residency and like that. So that's kind of where my career's been. It's been satisfying. I teach now quite a bit, a lot of private students, but my performance schedule is still pretty heavy. depending on how much Johnny works, and whatever else comes around. I do many things with the New York Horns. My partner John Isley, a saxophone player who also plays in the Jukes, and I put New York Horns together in 1997. So I'll stop there.
Sure. So going back to the beginning of your career, starting more high school and middle school, did you have any teacher or mentor that you looked up to while learning how to play the trumpet?
Yeah, I did. First of all, the band director, Pete DeLuke, in Hastings High School, was a really excellent. He's still alive. He's in his mid-90s. He lives out in San Diego, still playing. He's a great saxophone player, great woodwind player. And so he would be certainly a mentor. But also, there was a guy 2 years older than me named Steve Frankovich, who has passed away, but he was incredibly adept early, really good player, very accomplished, had a nice career mainly in Europe, but he was very much who I looked up to when I was a kid in terms of playing, so those people also, the great trumpet player Joe Shepley had taught in Hastings before I was there, before his career took off. And his influence was very strong, both in the school, and then I would go to his house and hang out and learn from him on occasion. So those people especially, I would say, were influential.
Did any of those people ever help you learn how to play another instrument, or throughout your career have you learned to play any other instruments?
I play piano. I do quite a bit of horn arranging. So, having the ability to orchestrate while sitting at a piano is important. You know, the trumpet is a single note instrument. So the more you learn about chords, the better you are. So, I would say I have gotten better at piano in the last few years as I've decided I just will play it, not just use it as a tool. But that is my secondary instrument. I also sing some, trumpet takes a full-time commitment. It is not an instrument you can put down and pick up at your leisure. So that takes the majority of my focus.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that as well. I practice trumpet a lot, and I actually used to play piano as well before I started to play trumpet. So when I went into playing trumpet, I knew some of the notes because of piano, so that really helped me.
Mm-hmm.
And did you take any musical classes throughout your educational years?
Yes. Not really when I was in high school in Hastings, but when I went to Manhattan School of Music Prep Division, I played in an orchestra there, but I also took theory and ear training, which was, it was very daunting to me. When I was young, I was very intimidated by the idea that that musicians were born, not made, and I was not sure that I was talented enough. So taking those classes was scary to me, and it took me many years of breaking down my fear to understand how to listen, how to analyze music, how to allow myself to be the musician that I can be, you know, to put it bluntly, that being me is okay. I don't need to be somebody else. So yes, I did. I took theory, which was fine, ear training, which was really great, and then there was some solfeggio involved with ear training, which is sight singing and that kind of thing. So yeah, I took those classes.
I'm a freshman right now, but for my sophomore year of school, I'm taking music theory as well, so that'll be fun for me to learn all the different ways how to play music and all the notes.
Yeah, the nuts and bolts of music is fascinating. It's very mathematical in a lot of ways, and it's amazing how many things relate. They relate to each other, and the more you can understand how they relate to each other theoretically, in combination with how it works with your ear, the more adept you can become.
And you were talking about before how you began your career in Latin music, playing with many greats, including Ray Barreto and Celia Cruz. Did you grow up listening to Latin music?
No, that's kind of an interesting story. I was in Manhattan School of Music, and I was practicing in a room, and some other trumpet player came in and said, "Hey, you know, now that you're getting stronger," because I was working on becoming a lead trumpet player. "Now that you're becoming stronger, you should play Latin music." And I was like, "Yeah, sure." I mean, I wanted to work. I had no idea what it was. The guy sent me to a band to play with, and I went and I rehearsed with them. And in my brain, I was thinking, "What is this?" I had no understanding of the music at all. This isn't jazz. This, you know, I didn't understand the singing. I obviously didn't understand the language. But it was very confusing to me. And to put it nicely about myself, I was very dismissive of it. Uneducated manner. Anyway, I went to a record store and asked the guy in the record store for a Latin record that he recommended, and he gave me this record, Eddie Palmieri's Sentido, which I went home and put on my record player and listened to the first 5 minutes of it, and I was like, this is garbage, and I put it away, and I went back, and I still rehearsed with the band, and we went, and I still didn't like the music, to be honest with you. And then we went and played our first gig, and I'm in a nightclub in the Bronx, and I'm looking out, and I'm seeing the people dancing, seeing the women dancing, but seeing the couples dancing, and I started to understand a little bit of the movement of the music as I watched people dance. And the more I played the music, the more I started to like it. I went back after a couple months and put back on Eddie Palmieri's Sentido at home, and I was amazed at how much better it was 2 months later. I mean, it's become one of my one of my favorite records of all time. And so, yes, I did not know anything about the music. I very much grew up in a suburban environment. I was not exposed to much black music, except for big band swing. I was not exposed to any Latin music at all. It's as an adult that I found it, and it saved my life in a lot of ways, Latin music, because it opened up the world for me. It made it possible for me to understand that there was a bigger world than the one that I grew up in.
Has it shaped your trumpet playing style?
Absolutely. Yes, it's still with me all the time. The Latin music, the groove, the swing of Latin music is inside of me all the time. And in fact, Southside and Jeff Kazee, who is the musical director in Southside, when I write horn parts, ever so often they will start laughing and say, like, there's the Latin music coming out, because it's there all the time with me.
And before, you also said throughout your career, you broke with people such as Southside Johnny, John Bon Jovi, Bruce Springsteen, and also arranged so many horn sections. How does it feel to perform with such great names as those people?
It's an honor, and it's when you work for someone who is as famous as the names you mentioned, you have to do your job first of all. The main thing is you have to do your job. And then you have to fit in. You have to be, you have to make them comfortable. They are special people because most of them are very driven. They're very focused people for them to have succeeded the way they have. And you need to be focused as well. The best example of that is Bruce Springsteen. Is being on the stage with him, it is eye-opening because you can't take your eyes off of him. And when you're performing, he is so magnetic, and he is able to lead the band with almost no direction, but you know where he's going. You know where he wants you to go. It's really quite amazing. So that is incredible. And then to have worked with the Allman Brothers, you know, to get to sit and talk to Greg and tell him that when I was in high school, I went and saw him at the Watkins Glen Rock Festival, which was it was in the late 70s, and it was the biggest rock festival at the time in upstate New York. And I told him how important it was for me to see that band. I love the Allman Brothers, and that to play with him all those years later, it was great for me because at the time that I saw him playing, I had no idea how my trumpet playing and my interest in their music could ever come together. It seemed like two different worlds. And here I was playing with him at the Beacon Theater and writing horn charts for some of the tunes that I loved hearing them play, you know, Soul Shine and things like that. So it's great to work with people like that, but it's just great to work with talented musicians as well, with hardworking musicians who make their living doing this. It's a very special way to spend your life.
Do you mind telling me how you got involved with playing with these people?
It's like any other business. It's you get recommended by someone who knows them. They need a trumpet player, and your name comes up, and the phone rings. That's how it happens, as it happens in most businesses. You know, if it's somebody that they have respect for and they recommend you, then you get the phone call.
Interesting. Is there one piece of music that you've arranged in your career that you're most proud of?
No, I wouldn't say that. I feel like I'm always becoming better as an arranger. I just heard a cut that I arranged for Glenn Alexander, who plays in the Jukes, his band Shadowland, that he just put out. And I was like, wow, the horns sound good. I did a good job on that. And then last week, I did a record for a Jersey-based singer and piano player named Bobby Lynch. And I arranged two tunes, and that session came out really, really well. So there's no, it's after I've done something, I listen to it back, and sometimes I hear things I don't like. But in general, you know, you move on, and you have to be proud of what you've done and let it go. When you're more involved, like the New York Horn stuff, where I've been involved from the very beginning to the very end with John, I listened to some of that. We did an EP in 1999, and then a record in 2014. And every so often, I'll listen to those things and think, "Wow, that's I was really in a different place when I wrote that." So that would be my answer.
And do you have any special memories from Asbury Park?
I'll tell you one memory I have. I was in Manhattan School of Music, and I saw an ad on the billboard that said band in New Jersey needs a trumpet player. And I think the ad said that it had a record deal. And I went down to the Stone Pony on the train and walked into the club some afternoon. And I don't really remember who was there. I imagine it was Steve Van Zandt. And I think Richie La Bamba Rosenberg. And I auditioned for the band. I didn't get in the band at the time. But I remember going to Asbury Park on the train and going and playing. And what I learned from that audition was that Steve Van Zandt said, okay, let's play whatever it was, having a party or what it was that they asked me to play. And I was like, what, you don't have music? And they were like, oh, you mean you didn't learn the songs from the record? And that was a big lesson to, if you're going to audition something for something, you better be ready for it. And I had no idea what I was supposed to have prepared, I guess is the way to explain it. So I did not get into the band then. I got in the band 30 years later.
And what was it like as the horn arranger and lead trumpeter for the Beacon Theater residency for the Allman Brothers that you were talking about before?
It was great. It started off because Hood, who was the roadie for the Jukes and also worked the Beacon Theater residency for the Allman Brothers, recommended us as a horn section to their manager. And they at that time were doing almost an entire month at the Beacon, and they would have guest soloists come in to break it up and to change it up a little bit for them. So they called us up. I talked to Warren Haynes, who was running the band at the time, and I agreed to bring in a five-piece horn section, and Pender and La Bamba, who were not really playing with the Jukes often, joined us. So we had three trumpets, trombone, two saxes, and I wrote some of the charts, and Richie wrote, La Bamba wrote some of the charts the first year, and we went in and played what was supposed to be a one-off, just one, you know, one hit. And they loved it so much because we came in and played it as a section, not as a soloist. So we played a correct rock horn section for them. So then they asked us back the next year, and that turned into two nights. And then over the years, we did it about 10 years. Over the years, it became pretty common for us to do it two nights a week, you know, maybe four times during the residency that they were there. So we did it quite often. And Warren all the time would call me up about a week before and say, you know, I'm thinking of doing this tune, and I would write arrangements. And, you know, we played some of the arrangements that we had always done, but the book kept getting bigger and bigger, and it was fun. It was a great audience, you know. It obviously always sold out and really ecstatic to hear the brothers. Some years, Greg was ailing, and some years he was really vibrant, but the band was very much run by Warren and Butch, and it was great. It was really fun.
I'm sure that must have been an incredible experience.
Yeah, it was.
So I don't know if you know this, but you and I actually share a love for Broadway. And you were talking about before that you've been you worked on a show called Beehive, but for my listeners out there, Mr. Anderson has also worked with the Broadway shows Bring In Da Noise, Bring In Da Funk, Swing, and Moving Out. How was it like playing in the pit for a Broadway show?
Well, I haven't done it a lot. That's not been my career. There have been times when it seemed like it might become my career, but I kind of backed away from it. After I finished Beehive, I certainly could have had my career go that way, where I would start subbing more on Broadway and get more involved with it. But I didn't have a great love for sitting in the pit and playing. If you notice that the shows that I was involved in, like Moving Out, the Billy Joel show, and Bring In The Noise, they're more rock horn oriented shows. I did other things. I did a little on the Full Monty and I've done a few, but I've done shows that I've subbed on and not been asked back, which when you sub on a show on Broadway, it's a very specific and taxing job. You need to come and bring your A game and sound as close to the person whose book you're playing as you can. And sometimes it's successful and sometimes it's not. But Broadway, the best thing about Broadway is the musicianship is very high and you're expected to play at a very high level. And that is always, I enjoyed, when I did Swing, it was a last minute call because the trumpet player, they had just started the show Swing and the trumpet player had injured himself. And I went in really with almost no notice, and it was an on-stage band, and there were two instances where you had to go down as the trumpet player and interact with the cast in front of the stage, and I literally went in that afternoon. The choreographer showed me where to walk to. I never did anything with the cast and then played that night. So it was an interesting experience. And I did that for a while, a couple months before they found somebody who they preferred more in that role. But Broadway's been an interesting experience for me, but it has not been my career.
So this summer I actually played in the pit for a show in my local town. I played the trumpet, and we rehearsed for about like once a week for a few weeks. And then for the show, for Tech Week, we rehearsed for, it must have been like hours for like 1 week in a row, and then there were about four shows. I remember how tired I was just for that week. Did it ever get like tiring to do a Broadway show over a longer amount of time?
Well, I wouldn't say it especially gets tiring. I think it can get mentally taxing. I would say that the most interesting thing about preparing for a Broadway show when you're subbing is you work so hard to play and you get in, and if you get accepted after the first time, the next time you go in, you've relaxed a little bit and then you start making more mistakes. It's very much a mental game. To play the same thing correctly time and time again is a concentration aspect. But you should know as a trumpet player, you know, that's the ability to play the trumpet accurately is the most difficult thing to do, that's a mental and physical act. Yes, what show did you play?
It's the show called Wonderful, The Wonderful Town.
Uh-huh.
And it was an amazing experience for me. I made a lot of friends. I met some players that actually played in Broadway pits. That was really cool. And I met some up-and-coming musicians that are trying to make it big in the music industry. And that was really cool as well. And you were talking about how playing trumpet's actually pretty hard mentally and physically. And I can actually relate to that as well, as I'm practicing for my NISMA. That's in April. And I'm learning how to play. I know how to play, but it's hard for me to learn how to play in 6/8, the different parts of 6/8. It's so I definitely agree with you on that part.
Yeah, I tell all my students, trumpet is a sport. Ultimately, it is not an instrument that you can let lie fallow for a couple weeks and pick up and play. You need to practice every day, and if not every day, every other day, and if not every other day, as often as you can. If I lay off a day, this was said by the great Louis Armstrong. He says, if I lay off a day, I know it. If I lay off 2 days, the critics know it. If I lay off 3 days, the audience knows it. So say it better than him.
Yeah, and how long do you practice for just when you're playing every day?
It depends. For my maintenance, I need to do basically an hour. That's pretty easy for me to do. I come down to my studio in the morning and I pick up my trumpet and I do a nice long warm up. And then I play through some music, and you know, it might be 45 minutes, it might be an hour, but that'll have set me up. I will say that when I practice seriously and I get to the second hour, in other words, if I finish 2 hours of practicing, then I can feel that I am in a different zone, and I can play. Then I can get real work done. My everything will be in sync, and my brain will be into it, but that's not every day. There were times in my life, and there have been times in my life when I've done that on a usual basis, 2-3 hours, 4 hours, 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the afternoon. But that's not every day. And it depends also on if I'm working at night. If I'm working at night, I might not play as much, but I will always play. I will never lay off unless I lay off because I'm out with my wife on vacation, or I'm just too busy doing other things. I'll never lay off the horn. I'll play. And then I play also because I teach. I have probably 9 students, so I play when I'm teaching.
And when you actually play, I'm pretty sure when I was researching, I found that you play the silver-plated Cannonball 42, right?
No, it's not silver-plated. I play the Cannonball 42, but mine is raw brass.
Oh, raw brass.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm a young trumpet player, and I currently rent my trumpet. If I was trying to buy a trumpet for me to use for the rest of my life, how do you know what trumpet is right for you?
Ooh, that's a... I'm not sure that there's a simple answer to that. The first thing I would say is that there's gradations of trumpet. There are very, very basic beginner trumpets that are not going to give you what you need to get through playing important things. Then there are intermediate trumpets that'll get you through high school and maybe into college. And then there are professional trumpets. In terms of professional trumpets, there are many, many now. They're ever since Monet started making very expensive handcrafted instruments, there are many small shops making handcrafted instruments that go for $4,000 to $10,000, a lot of money. And then the other instrument makers, whether it's Bach or Schulke or Yamaha, many of them, they all have gotten better as well. There's a lot of good trumpets out there. In terms of yourself finding an instrument to play, I think it's important that you play some different instruments. Used instruments are a great way to go. There's no reason not to play a used instrument. I wouldn't especially buy one on the internet where you can't return it, unless it was from a shop that you know you can return it. You can go to a musical instrument store that sells used instruments and try used instruments as well as new instruments. But I'm not sure that there's any specific thing that you should look for. I would go with someone who can listen to you play. It needs to be an instrument that you feel comfortable playing in tune. There are certain instruments that, as we say, as trumpet players, slot better than others, that the pitch sits better. But it's a personal thing. When I started playing the Cannonball 42, the Cannonball had approached me about endorsing their instruments, and I had tried some of their instruments, and they weren't for me. And then a great trumpet player, a friend of mine, Raoul Lagrasse, had told me that Cannonball had a new line of trumpets and that I should try this Cannonball 42. And I tried it, and the first one I played, I liked, and I've been playing it ever since. I'm probably in the I'm looking for a new instrument at the moment, but we'll see how soon I find one.
And what about mouthpieces? What would you recommend for mouthpieces?
For years I played a mouthpiece made by Joe Shepley that was, I thought it was helping me, and I think I've learned that it probably hindered me more than it helped me, because it was very much a mouthpiece with a very tight throat that projected my sound, small cup. It allowed me to play lead trumpet, but it kept me from being able to move around the horn the way I like at this point in my career to move. But it's a personal thing. I would say that as a young player, playing a Bach 5C or something equivalent to that is probably the best way to go. A middle of the road mouthpiece that is going to allow you to have a good sound that you can be comfortable with. It's very important that your sound is something you are comfortable with, that you're not fighting the horn to try to create the sound that you hear in your head.
So Mr. Anderson just gave me and my listeners a little advice about mouthpieces and what trumpet that you would want to get. So if you have any closing statement or advice you would want to make for my listeners out there that would want to make a career in music, what would you say to them?
It can be a very difficult way to make a living, especially these days when you cannot sell records, when music is free. But at the same time, it's an incredibly rewarding life to do something that affects people in such a positive way. I'm a true believer that positive energy is that if you create positive energy, then you receive positive energy. And being a musician has allowed me to to receive a lot of gifts from the world in terms of good feelings. Music is an amazing language of love, and I would say that if you are what I would say that what the, my high school band director said to me, which is that you don't play music if you can do anything else, which at the time that he told me I did not understand, but as the years have gone on, I completely understand that music is a compulsion, if you're compelled to make music, you're going to make music, whether you get make a living of it or you just do it for your own spiritual growth. It's a great thing to experience.
Thank you so much for those beautiful words of advice.
All right.
It's been a pleasure talking to you today, Chris.
You as well, Gabriel. Take care.
Thank you. You too. And Schreiber right. High School, I've been having so much fun today with this interview that I don't want to go home. But it's that time again. This has been your host, Gabriel, and the Epic Entertainment Roundup, saying thanks for listening.